Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 125. I'm Dave. I'm here solo again. No Stu, still in jury duty. We've got upcoming episodes coming up with guys like Ray, Jimmy Terzis and others. But this episode, it's all Dave. I'm in my parents' house, the bunker. Been up here for the weekend. We're getting renovations done to our own place. And, I mean, a different experience that you've probably seen before. I've not been up here recording before. I've got the cap on, got the sunglasses on. I'm sheltered, I'm bunkered, I'm ready to roll. Now, what's the first thing on the agenda? Well, there's a few sort of items. Firstly, I want to announce that we're doing two trades this week. That's right, kids, two trades. One is Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons, and the other one is Northlanders Book 2 by Brian Wood and a cadre of artists. Yeah, look, so obviously breaking with tradition as Stu's away and just did two trades, and when we get to them, I will admit, it was a challenge, and it was a challenge I thought I was going to meet, and in the end, only just met. But that's for later in the show. I've started reading Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. I know Stuart's talked about how good he is before. Dion, who we've had on the show, is a huge fan as well. Started reading that series. I find it's very good. Don't get me wrong. It's a very good fantasy book. I'm finding, for some reason, my brain not aligning as easily with fantasy books as it did when I was, you know, back in my teens. And there's an adjustment period there. But I am giving this book a go because it is quite interesting. And I think I read a couple of the books of the Mistborn series, which I also really enjoyed. So it's a good read. And I will report back in on that. Now, I want to make mention of a show that I saw the first episode of, which I really was impressed by, was The Boys. Came into it with sort of subdued expectations. Almost didn't bother watching it, but it's there on Amazon Prime. You know, I'm paying for the service. So I figured, hey, you know, may as well check it out. Watched the first episode. Really, really enjoyed it. To a point where I think I might even make The Boys next week's trade. I will confirm that after the show later in the week. But, like, the basic pitch is that superheroes, imagine superheroes if they were in our actual corporate world of today. And it's almost like propaganda. And they're all really twisted and really deviant. And The Boys, it refers, I think, to the organization or the team that puts down bad superheroes when they step out of line, basically. Carl Urban's in it. It was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. And I'm definitely going to keep watching this weekend. I've only watched the first episode so far, but it was a fantastic watch. Hush, Batman Hush. Review on that, also positive. Watched it with my mother, actually, last weekend. And, okay, it takes some big liberties with the storyline. And probably, this might be controversial, I don't think changing the twist helped the movie. That said, it was a very, very, very good experience to read and captured that best of feeling which the Hush comic had quite well. I personally really enjoyed it. I thought it was one of the more enjoyable Batman animated movies, and there's been quite a number of really good ones, and I thought this one was right in the top tier, probably in top five of you know, the animated movies that I've seen. It's very good, and I think a lapsed comic book fan or a lapsed Batman fan or your generic just follows the Batman movies would really enjoy it. I think they'd get a lot more out of it probably than those of us who are more into the details. And we know Hush, it's probably a slightly overrated storyline, in my opinion. I think it's a best of kind of comic. I think everyone gets a chance to shine, and this movie does capture that. So, look, it's easily 7.5 out of 10 as an animated experience. Just had this little note. For some reason, I was thinking a lot about Sinatra in the 90s and, like, during the 90s, and an article that I came across years ago on the internet, which basically Sinatra was playing in Vegas, like small clubs, supposedly, or at least a small room. I think it's more like what it was. And this guy was like traveling to Vegas, like about an hour drive, catching him every weekend for about 6 months. And it was Frank right at the end of his career. Obviously aged. But yeah, no, it was so, I've noticed something so interesting about that. And like, and he could still turn it on when he wanted to. Like he was, you know, he was faltering, but he was still Frank Sinatra. And I'm definitely thinking I'm going to incorporate that into the next Des Moines book as well. We had Sinatra in the 80s in Soul Fighter. We had Sinatra in the 60s in Blade of Exile. I think the next book we might have a little passage of Frank right at the end, as well as probably an early passage as well. We'll play around with the constructs of time. Live action, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles show may be coming to Netflix. And this was Kevin Eastman talking, and I didn't get the impression there was actually something actually happening here, but he's saying, I feel like that's some direction I think we can go, and there'll be enough of the audience to support both, because we can do a lot. We see a lot of fans ask where we can get that edgy, you know, Netflix Daredevil and sort of intensity to the Turtles. At the same time, you can balance that out with such a wonderful cartoon series like Rise of the Turtles, the new series, back to that spot where we're sacred to a much younger audience. So I think that's hopefully in the future. I'd love to see that, really. That's Kevin Eastman, one of the co-creators of the Turtles, talking. It feels like it's a way off, but I would definitely watch it. I would argue that although I didn't enjoy them, the Michael Bay movies tried to push it a little bit into that territory with the look of the Turtles, which I really dislike, the look of the Turtles in the Michael Bay films. The movies were okay. I'm a huge Turtles fan, but I think if they could do like a gritty kind of like City at War kind of storyline in live action, you know, kind of using those kind of like costumes of the original movie, I think it would be excellent. Now, here's a rumor, and this is a rumor. Namor will reportedly be the main villain in the sequel to Black Panther. Sounds really interesting. I forget the ins and outs of it all, but wasn't Namor fighting Black Panther at some point in Civil War, if I'm correct, in the comics? Maybe he wasn't, but for some reason I thought there was like a Wakandan versus a Glanda subplot there. Maybe I'm misremembering it, but I think it's a really good usage of Namor, who probably can't support his own movie, but definitely could be very handy in a kind of like, you know, a film as an antagonist against Black Panther. And I think definitely Namor will also factor into some Fantastic Four at some point. A new World of the Walking Dead comes this spring 2020. Honestly, I'm such a hypocrite, because Walking Dead is losing a lot of intensity for Michelle and myself as we're watching, but I am feeling that the new one, a new spin-off of the actual world, could be very interesting. We know we've got Rick's Walking Dead movies coming, so even though I've sort of indicated that I'm a bit over it, I'm actually down for it. So, I mean, yeah, I'm interested to see where it goes. Like, if you think about the world of The Walking Dead, there is the entire world, I think, it's happened to. So it could take place in different locales. I'd like to go back and watch Fear the Walking Dead, catch that last season that I haven't watched. I think I've only watched the first two seasons, so maybe catch some of that. Apparently that went up a lot in quality, because definitely Fear the Walking Dead at points was just felt directionless, felt rudderless as a show. But I think it would be very interesting to see if they can go in new directions, and maybe they can use Rick, you know, in those directions as well, like sort of tied into the movies or something that he's going to be doing. The Joker movie is entering the Venice Film Festival. It's entering the actual competition. It's not just being shown off to the side of the competition. It's actually entering official competition, and some people are saying that this is an indication that there will be Oscar chances on the movie, that it's being, you know, entered for your consideration, as they say. Well, we'll see. I mean, certainly, it's got a lot of building blocks that make it seem like it could be very much an award-worthy movie, but we'll see what the Joaquin Phoenix, you know, being it chief among those reasons, we will, of course, see how the film is. Like, when we actually watch the film, is it going to be like a Mean Streets? Is it going to be like a Goodfellas, a Taxi Driver kind of feel? Or what was the movie that Scorsese did? Was it called The Comedian? The one with Jerry Lewis? I've actually forgotten the name. I want to say it's called The Comedian. It's called something like that. It's got Jerry Lewis, Robert De Niro. It really is an interesting movie. Anyway, we can find that out at a later stage. It's not that vital to the Signal of Doom that we need to locate exactly. I believe it was in about 1983. Definitely has Jerry Lewis in it and Robert De Niro, and directed by Scorsese. So I almost got you there, kids. You know what I'm saying? Like Deadpool, Ryan Reynolds teased, saying it's been 5 years since the trailer was leaked. Who possibly could have done that? He was what he was saying. And also, he's teasing Phase 5. So could Deadpool be part of the Phase 5 plans, which we know involve Blade and potentially might involve, you know, the mutants and Fantastic Four, but definitely will involve Blade. So, yeah, I mean, look, I definitely want to see another Deadpool movie, and I hope it's R-rated, and I hope they do it. And I think Deadpool can easily poke fun at the acquisition by Disney or Fox, and he can certainly coexist. I think that if there's one character that's tailor-made for that, that's him. From Asgard to New South Wales, Sydney, Thor, Love and Thunder will be filming at Fox Studios in Sydney 2020. Fantastic for Australia, fantastic for Fox Studios, and fantastic to see this movie coming. I think Chris Hemsworth might have confirmed it. Yeah, look, I'm really looking forward to it. And in tie-in news, Lady Sif, played by the actress who's in Blindspot, offers to be Thor's queen in Thor, Love and Thunder. Now, I read this completely the wrong way. And this is probably on me, but, like, we know that Lady Thor is going to be Thor in Love and Thunder. And I assume we'll have kind of a Thor the Unworthy or Thor just can't, you know, wield the hammer in that universe, the main universe. I for some reason, the way I read it, I thought she was saying that she was offering to be Lady Thor's queen. And I was like, oh, okay, so they're going in that direction, or at least the actress is alluding to that. But then on rereading it, I was like, okay, she wants to be Thor's queen, but Thor is not actually going to be Thor. He's Thor the Unworthy, or I don't know. So I was to be fair, I was actually just confused. So I guess someone out there can clear this up for me. But, I mean, basically what she's saying, like, nuts and bolts, she's saying she wants to be in the movie, and apparently she was offered a role in Thor Ragnarok, but it was too late in the piece, or maybe it was Endgame. One of those two movies she was supposedly going to be in, but they didn't give her enough time. She's filming Blindspot, but it probably was Avengers Endgame to be in the fight scenes. But regardless, I really liked Lady Sif, and I like that actress. I've seen quite a bit of her. Michelle watches Blindspot, and it's a good show. So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be actually really good casting to have her in there, because you could also have Lady Sith, you could have Valkyrie, you could have like a team-up scene with them. There's a lot of things you could do with that. I think Taika Waititi's probably got, you know, the brain power and the vision to pull this kind of thing off. The Irishman. Stu and I have gone through over this a couple of times on Signal. We know that Stu's not a fan of the de-aging tech and thinks that, you know, it's going to be struggling having Pacino de-aged, De Niro de-aged, and Joe Pesci de-age. But nevertheless, it's a film about Hoffa. Is it Jimmy Hoffa? And basically his mysterious disappearance, and also this Irishman character, who I believe is based on a real person, that De Niro is... Is De Niro playing him? Okay. So there's a few elements of the storyline that I'm not aware of, but I think it was, yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. It was an interesting setup for a movie. I mean, Pacino, De Niro, Joe Pesci, you've got me at hello. I'll definitely be watching on Netflix. We know that they're spending an inordinate amount of money on it. Apparently, the de-aging tech on De Niro looked fine. I don't know. I didn't see it on too many of the other characters, but I did see it on him. And I thought it looked fine. I mean, it's Robert De Niro. Yeah, I'm definitely down for it. I just hope that the movie is exciting. Like some of Scorsese's movies, you know, at times cannot be as interesting as at other times. But he's definitely a master filmmaker. Like, I hope he doesn't turn up with the same mentality that he did Silence with. I hope he turns up with the mentality of a Casino, a Taxi Driver, that kind of a movie, a Mean Streets. You know, he really is one of the most gifted filmmakers of all time. Now, I've got some news here. I'm actually going to read out the full article because this is interesting. It's about the European comics of Conan, because, of course, Conan produces his own comics over in Europe. Now, Ablaze brings Glenant, spelled G-L-E-N-A-T, uncensored, violent, sexual Conan comics to US in October. Well, and here's the article, and Jude Terror has done it on Bleeding Cool. While Marvel has surely been making the most of the Conan license by publishing multiple solo series and even giving Conan his own Avengers team, over in Europe, where Conan is public domain, which is very important, more publishers are taking advantage of the Barbarian's appeal. Bleeding Cool is reportedly reported on Conan comics by French publisher Glenant and Italian publisher Leviathan Labs, both making Conan comics in Europe, and even suggested that Marvel should obtain the rights to translate them to English and publish them here. Well, Marvel hasn't done that, but Portland publisher Ablaze, which launched earlier this year, is bringing the Glenant's Conan comics to the US, beginning with Queen of the Black Coast. The comics are advertised as uncensored and the true Conan, unrestrained, violent and sexual. The first issue will hit stores in October and be published with new covers by Jason McCara and Dolphy Ed Beans, as well as Pierre Allary. Oh, and it's not called Conan, it's called the Cimmerian. So Conan, Cimmerian, Queen of the Black Coast. So Cimmerian, Queen of the Black Coast is the first one coming out. I think this is really interesting, and I think, I think I'll buy this in hardcover, frankly. I will honestly say that. I think this is a hardcover buy. I hope they are put out in hardcover when it's collected, because I think we'll review them on the show too, because I think it's so interesting that although Conan Properties, whatever they call themselves, own the license in the States, outside of America, it's public domain. And, I think, wow, I'm really kind of excited for this. In more Conan news, Savage, the first Avengers, Savage Avengers annual, will see Black Widow enter the fray to join forces with Conan the Barbarian and Damian Hellstrong. Comes to the creative team of Savage Avengers writers Jerry Duggan and Conan artist Ron Garney. The 48-page comic follows Conan as he attempts to put the kibosh on a human trafficking ring. Black Widow gets involved after following a trail of bodies left by the henchmen of the villainous magician Cullen Gath. Finally, the fury of Hellstrom is invoked by the prayer from one of the trafficked women. With that, an unlikely and certainly savage trio is formed. Well, okay. Interesting. We've kept covering Savage Avengers, and I think it's been a very interesting series. I mean, again, I think a series that when it gets collected in a full trade, I'll probably get. I'm a sucker for this Conan stuff, and Conan, Wolverine, Black Widow, Punisher, all these characters, I think are fantastic. Now, here's a controversial topic. Shannon Lee, the 50-year-old daughter of Bruce Lee, is not a fan of Bruce Lee's depiction in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This is, I think, sure to ruffle some feathers on both sides of the equation, because I want to put it right out front of the show. Bruce Lee, not only a huge icon, but an inspiration and one of the greatest ever in terms of action. I mean, he's the guy who introduced a lot of sensibilities to the West from just his impressive martial arts, his charisma, the way he sold it, his image. Everything about Bruce Lee is cool, basically. Like, everything about Bruce Lee is cool. There's nothing uncool about Bruce Lee. Now, apparently in the film, Brad Pitt's character, who plays a stuntman, is getting into a sort of a fight with him to determine who's best. Bruce Lee wins the first round. The second round's won by Brad Pitt, who throws him into a car, and the third round is interrupted. Bruce Lee's apparently quite egotistical and hot-headed now, which is very much what his daughter's saying he wasn't. I heard from David Carradine's lips himself that Bruce Lee was very arrogant towards the end of his life. Now, that's just one man's opinion. You know what I mean? And Bruce Lee, like, I don't know, his persona was just so cool. It's a bit disappointing to hear that Quentin didn't give him the full spotlight, like to have, apparently Steve McQueen's also in the movie, a character playing Steve McQueen. It's a bit disappointing, but then again, they had a fight scene. You've definitely got, and the daughter said this, she understands, you've got to have Brad Pitt earn his cool points by being able to, you know, take some points off Bruce Lee. He can't just be totally savaged, otherwise his character could lose some momentum. But I don't know, it's good that, for me, he's part of the conversation. I mean, I think it's recognition that Bruce Lee is such a huge, impactful person in the 60s and 70s. Starship Troopers is being remade. An original director of the 1996 Starship Troopers, I think Paul Verhoeven, is not happy. Apparently the reboot will go back to science fiction author Robert E. Heinlein's original novel, and this is particularly troubling. It's said, and this is quoting him, it's said in the article, the production team of that movie, of the remake, that they would go back and more towards the novel. And, of course, we really, really tried to get away from the novel because the novel was so fascistic and materialistic, militaristic. You could very much feel going back to the novel would fit very much in a Trump presidency. Okay. So I thought there was a level of satire in the movie. There was a heavy level of satire in the movie. And he went on further to say that he felt like things like RoboCop and Total Recall's reboots failed because they failed to take into account the satire, which I think they do miss. I think they do miss the satire point. They go for just the action beat, and they miss the satire, which is part of what made the movie so much fun, especially like a RoboCop and Starship Troopers. I really felt that like those movies kind of sang in a lot of ways, and the reboots didn't at all. The reboots felt flat on arrival. DOA. This is interesting. This is so typical. The other day I was reading a DC comic book. Actually, it was in fact one of the weekly comics this week. It had a ad for Wildcats. Not a property I've ever taken much interest in, but the art was so cool of Grifter and someone else that I thought, oh, actually, and Warren Ellis was involved. I was like, oh, I'll pick that up. I was literally, the ad worked. I was like, oh, I'll get that. Diamond Comics distributors have informed retailers that DC have cancelled all orders for Warren Ellis and Ramon Villalobos's Wildcats 1 to 3, but the publisher intends to resolicit them at some future date. How sad is for the series ran in some of this week's DC books. Yes, thank you so much, DC, for getting me kind of excited and then completely letting me down. I mean, it's always such a pleasure to... You're actually getting to the point now where you're advertising the books and the comics, and then you're cancelling the comic before it even comes out. Like, you're the ones wasting your own money now, DC. Like, honestly, it's amateur hour. And by the way, this relaunch was formally announced back in May for an August 28 debut, with Ellis talking about it online as far back as March 2017. So, anyway, like, it's not the end of the world. Like, life will go on. It's just disappointing, frankly. Now, we've got Shopping with Dave. Look, this is covering this week and the week upcoming. I've actually found some interesting ones. This is out of the King's Comic Book newsletter. So, kids, go onto King's Comics website or go into their store in Sydney and grab these issues if you can, and these comics. Now, the first one is the Authority Omnibus hardcover. I mean, this is... I actually checked. It's covering Warren Ellis's and Brian Hitch's complete runs. Then it's also covering some specials, including an origin of Jenny Sparks, or kind of the 100-year storyline of her. It's got a couple of other little specials in there. I believe it's all done by Brian Hitch and Warren Ellis. Retails for, I think, $80 US, slightly over $100 here in Australia. Look, a really good series. A really damn good series, The Authority. And the Warren Ellis run, I remember picking it up. People had mentioned it in some chat message boards probably a couple of years after it came out, and I picked it up with very low expectations. I just was like, oh, well, I'll just grab this. Like, why not? I'll just grab it. I'll just pick a trade up. A friend of a friend had told me it was good and that I would enjoy it, and it blew me away at the time. I couldn't believe how good it was. I went back, read the entirety of Stormwatch, which is the lead-up comic that Authority comes out from, and I read all of Warren Ellis' Stormwatch, which is also excellent, and you can see he was honing his craft back in those days. So, heavy recommend to the Authority Omnibus hardcover. Then we had Electro Assassin trade paperback. I would love to hear people's responses to this. I picked this up as a kid. It's 12, 13. I picked it up, and it completely messed with my head. I knew almost nothing about modern Marvel or any Marvel, like the most basic elements of Marvel. I knew who Daredevil was because he'd fought Punisher. I was so tripped out by this comic book and so confused. I picked up the hardcover a few years ago, just pure nostalgia, because the original had blown my mind so much. And so it's coming out now as a trade paperback, and I would definitely say check it out. It is, if you're a Daredevil fan, then you definitely should check it out, because it goes into some really interesting ideas with Elektra. And Frank Miller did the writing, and I think Bill Sienkiewicz, I want to say, did the artwork. And the artwork is very revolutionary for its time. Then we had the Terminator Sector War trade paperback. I'm picking this one up just purely out of interest for the name, and I do want to read more Terminator comics, so... I'm not even sure what that one's about, but I think it's just a cool name. The Terminator Sector War. So sometimes in Shopping with David, you go on hunches as well. Berserker Unbound 1. I'm going through a huge Vikings phase. Jeff Lemire on writing duties, and I'll be covering this. It's a weekly comic or monthly comic. I'll be covering it next week on The Signal. Berserker Unbound coming from Dark Horse. Finally, and this was a big week for Shopping with Dave, we had Marvel, The Art of Conan the Barbarian hardcover. Look, I've seen this solicited online. It looks fantastic. It's a whole selection of artwork from the Marvel run from the 70s into the 80s and then even into the 90s. The 225-issue run plus Savage Sword, there's just going to be a stack of artwork there. If you like fantasy artwork, and I do, often I like it more than fantasy writing, this is a must-get. Like, it's that simple. It's a must-get.
If you're a Conan fan, you should be picking this up. Frankly, I'm going to be that blunt. If you're a Conan fan, you should be picking this up. It's that simple. The equation is so simple. Go support it. Now, as I said, these are all available, obviously, via the King's Comics site. And if you walk into their store, if you're in Australia, I recommend you do so.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
Now, weekly comics. Okay, so I picked the weekly comics this week. No Stew, so there's quite a bit of Conan. So we know what his response would be, but he's not here, so I will cover it myself. The first one was Conan the Barbarian, an excellent issue with Gerardo Zaffini on art. This was my favorite one of the issues so far. So I've found Jason Aaron's run very strong. It's definitely like a 7.5 out of 10 run. This was more like an 8.5 issue. The art by Gerardo Zaraffini is fantastic. I want to say I think he's from Argentina. Potentially, if I'm right, he could be the son of the guy who did Winterworld, which is a fantastic artist. I feel like I've seen his work before. And it was very good. And basically, Conan's going back to Sumeria, and the townspeople of his, you know, town or village are all overtaken by this kind of almost like zombie kind of presence, and kind of gets to the bottom of that with a bit of hack and slash and a lot of cool little nudges and details. I really liked that he was bringing back gifts for people in the village, which he then had to use to stop the people, and he used them quite cleverly. So you got an insight into Conan. Conan might not be the most intelligent guy in the room, but he's one of the most cunning. And he uses that cunning in this issue, and it's a particularly good issue. Like I keep saying with this Conan stuff, another one I'm going to collect in hardcover when they put it out. Like, I think this would be fantastic. I think this run deserves it. I think the Conan the Barbarian title by Jason Aaron has been really strong. What do we have next? Powers of X at 1. Wow, this was complex, convoluted, and quite cool, but I didn't love it. If I can be brutally frank, it was a bit of a chore to read. I know Hickman is setting the groundwork. I didn't really understand what was going on, I'll be honest. Like, it almost felt it was above my pay grade. Like, there's just so much going on, and it's not explained very well. And the text pieces don't really help because the comic's so dense. You get to a text piece, and, like, honestly, I'm like, I feel like, can I be bothered? Can I be bothered reading this text? Because I feel like I've worked so hard through the regular comic that you get to that stage and you're just like, seriously? Like, how much more reading do I have to do for one issue? I'm giving it 7.5 out of 10. I'm not going overboard with my rankings because, frankly, no, in fact, I'm downgrading it. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. I think it's quite inaccessible, and I think Marvel have a right to be slightly concerned. I think it will all tie together. I think, you know, in the end, we'll all admire the genius of what Jonathan Hickman's doing, but this was a tough issue, and it's a number one. So I'm interested to see where it goes. I guess they're just going to back his play to the hilt. They've got to. They know what they're getting themselves into. They've seen what he did on Avengers. They know what he did on Fantastic Four. It's long-form storytelling, and it's tough month to month with Jonathan Hickman because he's so conceptual. And this reminded me a lot of East of West, a comic I also enjoy, but I did find tough to understand what was going on. Like, honestly, I think it's because he comes at it from a very high top level. And as a piece at the end, it's fantastic. It's like this huge monument. But when he's just doing it week by week, month by month, you know, it can be very hard to discern the bigger shape of the whole picture. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 because I didn't feel it was very accessible, but it is quite a cool comic book. And don't get me wrong, I will continue reading for sure. Like, Powers of X1 might be tough to read, but it was still an enjoyable read. And people shouldn't forget that 7 out of 10 is still 70%. You know, it's still actually a pretty good score. And that's how we're scoring these days on Signal. Batman Secret Files 2, look, 6 out of 10. Some interesting little stories with an anthology one. The Hugo Strange storyline was excellent. It was definitely the best one there, but some of the other stuff was a bit weak. If if you're picking up Batman Secret Files 2, you're a big Batman fan already, you're probably a bit of a completist. This is one for the completists only. I'm giving it 6 out of 10. I read, finally, in Weekly Comics, I caught up on Savage Sword of Conan 6 and 7, which I basically had missed because I was letting it build up. This was two strong issues, two standalones. One is a slaver story with some gorgeous art by Luke Ross. The other one is a gambling one by Jim Zub, who's also right in the corner of the comics we're doing this week in Trade of the Week. Two very strong issues coupled with strong artwork. All the strengths of Conan, the one and done deals. Although Savage Sword of Conan 7, it's only the first part. Conan deals himself into a gambling game after a guy that he was working for gets killed, and he basically passed all his debts and affairs on to Conan, who then deals himself into the game. In total, for those two issues, I'm giving 7.5 out of 10. I really quite like the first one as well, about the slavers. It was a very cool storyline. You felt that you could string that storyline out more, but I thought it was very good, just a one and done. I'm giving them both 7.5 out of 10 as a piece. Now we're coming to Trade of the Week. So this is a shorter show this week, but we've got two trades, and it was kind of like a slow news week. And this happens sometimes in the industry. Like, sometimes there is just less news to report on. There's less scandals. There's less, you know, infighting. There's less people losing their heads on Twitter. There's less burning in the village town square. You have a kind of pretty chilled week, and that's what this week was. I felt we got some really good storylines, but we got nothing that was, like, epically, desperately needed Dave to report on, like, crime side, you know, like curbside, just there as it's going down, looking at the bleeding body, trying to decipher, you know, hunting down leads, chasing cops, etc. None of that. This was almost like at times a vanilla week for me. Like, the news wasn't hot enough for me to touch. I'm sort of like, at one point Lois was just I said to Adam the computer and to Ray, feed me news, guys. What have you got? Well, I didn't have a lot. Anyway, so we did. That's why I said we're doing two trades. So the first trade is Jim Zub. I think it's Tina Fowler on art. I'm going to actually find out who the artist was. But look, so Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons. We know the Rick and Morty show. I've watched a few episodes myself. I personally found it extremely amusing. And I thought to myself, this is a show that I want to watch more of. And I think it's Tess Fowler. Actually, there you go. I think I've... Let's see. Let's see if I'm correct. We're going to the actual book itself. No, completely wrong. Written by Patrick Rothfuss and Jim Zub. Art by Troy Little. Atesh Fowler contributes some variant covers, though, which are very good. Now, the basic concept is, as we know, Rick and Morty, Adventure of the Week. Well, this adventure this week is that he wants to get really into... Morty wants to get really into Dungeons and Dragons because one of the girls at his school is playing Dungeons and Dragons and he thinks it's a way to get laid. So he basically asks his grandpa Rick about it, and Rick is obviously this massive, massive Dungeons and Dragons head from back in the day, and then it turns out so's the father and his sister also, and the mother. So they all go on the adventure together, basically. And it's a really neat clash of that satirical Rick and Morty style, which we know so well, which is really prevalent in the first couple of issues, and I felt were the strongest issues. I thought it was really funny, really kind of sang. It was extremely good. And then it goes more into the D&D aspect, which, again, is quite strong, and... You know, it plays with conceptions of good and evil. The humor's there, but the humor gets dialed back in the last two issues, which I found an interesting choice because I felt the humor was so on point early on. And then once you get to D&D land, the humor, it's a little bit more reticent. It sort of goes a bit think-piecey, which I know at times the show can do as well. It's still very strong. This was definitely one of the strongest kind of... humor comics that I'd read. I went into it with... I've probably watched about five or six, probably about six Rick and Morty episodes and really enjoyed it. So I knew the basic pitch that obviously the grandpa is this crazy scientist guy who goes into alternate dimensions, does all kinds of stuff. And Morty's just like the little kid. He's like a little hapless goon. And together they just have wacky adventures every single week. And, yeah, they play with some concepts. Like, for example, the father has left... the house, which obviously probably happened in the show. I haven't watched it, but, you know, and it was interesting to see those characters get a bit more room to breathe than I saw in the first few issues, episodes of the show. The D&D stuff is very clever. It's funny. I mean, it's affectionate. Like, this is coming from IDW, who publish D&D comics, so I think it was actually a really clever move to have the two things intersect. And, I mean, why not make use of your licenses? I think IDW are one of those companies that are so clever with their license usage. Like, you look at their G.I. Joe, their Transformers, their Rick and Morty, their Dungeons and Dragons. Like, they're continually – they're very strong on these properties. Like, you read the Dark stuff. They had Conan before. Reading it, it was very good. They know how to handle a property. Now, with all that said, I did think that – the humor did go out a little bit. Like, I'm giving this as a comic, I'm going to give it 8 out of 10. And at one point when I was reading it on issue 2, I thought this is like a 9 out of 10 comic. I think the humor gets diluted when they go into D&D world. I think it's still interesting. I think the Dungeon Master was interesting. Basically what happens is they get sucked into a world where Dungeons and Dragons is real. But there was just something about it that I felt kind of dulled the edge of Rick and Morty's kind of savage brand of comedy, and maybe that was adherence to some structures from, you know, for the D&D kind of aspect. But I don't know, it was interesting, and it went from being extremely funny and extremely good to a very interesting and cool comic, which is why it's getting 8.5 out of 10. 8 out of 10. I don't think it deserves more than 8. I think 8's a very fair score, and I could be argued, you know, potentially that I'm being too generous, but I'm going to give it an 8. We reached out to Jim Zub on Twitter, and thank you to Jim Zub who replied back when I said, you know, I was really enjoying it. You know, it's another good read. Like, you're not going to be let down. There's a sequel coming, which he tweeted out. I retweeted it. There's a sequel coming to this, which I think is well deserved. Like, you finish this and you're like, man, I could read more Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons. And I mean, it's a great advertisement for both properties. I'm definitely going to watch more Rick and Morty now. And I'm always, you know, happy for D&D. I wish I had more time in my life I'd play D&D, you know. Like, seriously, like, I really would. Like, if I could find a group and play D&D, I would be thrilled. But I don't have that kind of time, you know, honestly, in my life. I'd have to, like, lose something, like a fucking limb. But I'm not going to do that. I don't know if losing a limb would actually help, especially if it was a hand for rolling dice. Well, that's one, the, you know, lost one of those would be bad. But anyway, 8 out of 10, extremely enjoyable. Then we had Dungeons & Dragons as well. And, like, I was thinking to myself that we might even do – I was actually thinking of doing full Dungeons & Dragons on this episode. But, frankly, I started reading one of the Dungeons & Dragons comics and I was completely turned off with its quality. And I actually – I don't know if I was just in a bad mood, but I was just like, no, I'm not feeling it at all. And so I, instead, we're doing Northlanders, book two. Now, you might remember, I've actually got, you might remember my new thing now where I'm reading out the Wikipedia. Well, this is actually coming off the back cover. So if you recall, we did Northlanders volume one or book one. It's quite a big phone book style kind of style Vertigo comic. We did book one, probably 6 months ago. And I really enjoyed it. It's about Vikings. And so this is, I'm reading from book two. This is the back of book two. From the shadows of the first millennium come the men and women who were to find the next. In AD 871, the Norsemen arrived on Iceland's shores. They sought land, freedom, and a new way of life. Over the course of centuries, these humble settlers built farms, clans, and towns that, until they shaped a new nation and its path through history. A daring man named Dag becomes the first man to ever turn his Viking boat west and sail to unknown shores in the Sea Road. 20 years after being exiled, Sven of Orkney comes face to face with his own mythology as a group of mercenaries come to hunt him down in Sven the Immortal. An older Icelandic fisherman discovers the body of a young girl embedded in the ice and then finds himself accused of her murder in The Girl in the Ice. And in the epic The Icelandic Trilogy, a small family with the name Hogson builds a powerful crime empire only to clash with the rising church. So that encapsulates different storylines that basically were part of the Northlanders saga. I believe that it actually is not collected in chronological order of how the or publication order. It's collected in the format of how the issues tie together. So, you know, which is interesting and makes a lot of sense. So I want to turn to the very first storyline. The art, by the way. Brian Wood's great when it comes to writing duties, but the art in these books is amazing. Like, you've got, like, Becky Cloonan, you've got so many different people, Declan Shelby, Fiona Staples. I'm naming, you notice something? I'm naming big, big name artists, some of who became probably became bigger after this. So it's like Brian Wood got them when they were on an upwards curve. Okay, so the very first, as everyone knows, I'm fascinated by Vikings. I've read multiple books on the topic. I just finished another Vikings book. I'm watching the Vikings TV show. For me, Vikings are, you know, second to Roman Empire, the coolest. You've got Roman Empire, then you've got Vikings, then you've got the rest. And in the first storyline, this guy, he basically is saying, we're not earning enough cash out of our normal trading. I'm going to go west, i.e. towards the Americas and stuff. But he discovers Iceland, and he goes against all wisdom. He goes, you know, kind of like, he just says, I'm going to go for it. And he's looking for new places to adventure, new trading routes. He's looking for new goods because the market's become so tight back where he's from. So that's the first one. It ends badly for him, but that's the first adventure. Then you have Sven of Orkney's character, who's referenced in the very first book one that we did, and basically he's older now and he's grappling with his own legend. Then you have the one where basically this old guy finds a girl in the ice. He unfrosts her. And he's trying to get to the bottom of, and he realizes that the people running the whole place will kill him, because when she died, there wasn't a huge search for her, and he eventually gets caught with the actual body, and they accuse him of the murder. And the mother says, "Oh no," she says to him personally, "I know that you didn't kill her. I know that she died holding this pendant which she took when she ran away, when she broke it, and she must have fallen through the ice and died." And the guy, he says he only wanted to know the truth, and now he knows it as he's going out to be executed. Because people think he's this old perverted guy, but really he's just an old guy who was fishing and happened to find her. Then you had the Icelandic trilogy. Again, the art of this trilogy was amazing. It tells a story of two families. The Hawksons are the ones who basically run the joint. Run all of Iceland. They have their quarrels, but it goes from the very beginning of the beginning generation to the next generation and all the way until Christianity is coming over and starting to sweep across all of Viking culture. And, of course, they also, from what my reading is, that Christianity was very big in propagating the myth of Ragnarok because it was giving the cycle of death to the gods and obviously to be replaced by the, you know, Catholic or Christian church, which is interesting. And it's really what's really cool in these storylines is that it's people on the very edges of civilization, and yet they're still scheming and planning and stuff. And this, like, for example, a lot of the women in this, one of the women in this, they're very much the protagonists of the storylines. They're the movers of the story. It's not all just like death and killing. Like, one thing that I start when I'm reading it, I'm like, man, I want more death. I want more pillaging. I want more killing. I want more kind of everything. More blood. But the violence is actually there, but it's not the center point all the time. There are character moments in these storylines. I sort of do wish they were more about Viking raids. I think that would be a really interesting comic as well. But this particular thing leans a bit more heavily on the interpersonal politics of the situation of the conflicts behind. There is violence. Don't get me wrong, there is violence. There's also some epically cool, like, scenery shots that you wonder if they're taken direct from photographs. They're so good. It is a powerful read in a lot of ways. I've got the third volume. I'm going to read that one as well. I read this. I read Rick and Morty early in the week, and I got through most of my weekly reading early. And then I had this book to read, and I'd announced I was doing it, and I really didn't feel like doing it. Like, I was just, like, burnt out. I was like, man, I know there's not going to be enough killing for me. But then I was like, I had a long train ride ahead of me, and I picked up the sort of small phone book sized edition and thought, okay, I'm going to read this on the train. Absorbed. It's like, it really is a good book. It draws you into it. There's a review here. As a picture of human behaviors in extreme settings, these stories are moving and memorable. I definitely agree. I mean, if you like moody character pieces with some violence, you will enjoy this. If you like Vikings, you'll enjoy it, but I will give you the caveat that there's not the level of killing you might like. There is violence, though. It's embedded in the storyline, in the way of life of the characters. So, you know, I hope I've, you know, given it a fair... Now, what? Good question. What am I giving this as a score? I thought long and hard about this because it's not everything I want it to be, but it's also an extremely good comic, and I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. Okay? Now, I want everyone to think about that for a second. 9 out of 10 on a comic that wasn't exactly my personal exact cup of tea for Vikings. Why? Because it's such a good storyline anyway, and my expectations should factor into the end product. Okay? I'm judging this on the product itself. 9 out of 10. Great writing, great art. Makes you want to read book 3, which I believe is the final volume. I've always wanted to know more about Iceland and the Vikings kind of like colonization of it. I also want to do a shout out to Lars Brownsworth's book called Vikings, The Sea Wolves. I read it recently. Extremely good. And in that he covers, along with the battling, he covers the colonization of Greenland and Iceland and et cetera. And actually, in fact, elements of this, and I recognize, like, the way Norway was trying to reincorporate them back. And, you know, it's just interesting that these people journeyed to these lands. They went to Greenland, they went to Iceland, they went to America, you know, with just the drive for adventure and lust for power and material goods and knowledge and all of that bound up. The Vikings are the coolest. I always said Roman Empire's one, but geez, Vikings push it. You know what I mean? Vikings push it. I mean, I want another. I wonder if there'll be another volume where they're in Constantinople. Because I've always wanted more stories, lines of that, like Vikings of the Mediterranean, sacking and pillaging. Like, give me some more of that. I mean, shout out to Michael Kellersham. I know, Michael, you've read heavily of Northlanders, and I believe that there's a story arc coming up in book 3 that Michael's a big fan of. But 9 out of 10 and 9 well-deserved points out of 10. Okay. Now, look, we've spun through the show fast, a solo show, just me, you know, just blazing, guns blazing, not even ranting this week. Nothing to rant about. Nothing happened. It's like the week where nothing happened. Like, it's the week where the Justice League are just palling around the offices, high fives, fist bumps, that kind of thing. I mean, I'm not even angry about anything. What's the world come to? Where I'm not pissed off about something. Anyway. Look, okay, next week I think we'll be doing The Boys. I think my whole brain's keyed up to it. I've got the comic here with me. I think I'll start reading. Stu's still a few weeks away. He'll be coming back shortly. We've got Ray on the agenda very soon. He might even be next week. And Ray and I are going to do The Massive together, another Brian Wood book, which I've not read, but I do want to read. So Massive coming up. We've obviously got The Boys as well. Now, where can you find us? Well, you can find us on Facebook, Signal Doom. Hit a like on the Facebook page. Thank you to everyone there. We're over 1,700 people on the Facebook page now. And some of the shows explode. It's been really cool. So thank you to all our new listeners as well. I know we've got listeners, like God, we've got listeners in Ghana, Taiwan, Mongolia, obviously in Europe, a stack in the States. Thank you to all my listeners in Canada and the USA. Listeners in Mexico as well, and obviously Australian listeners. I don't forget you guys. Maybe we've got some New Zealand listeners. Hey, Jordan, how are you, buddy? We're worldwide now. We're worldwide incorporated, and you know I'm not going to stop killing. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to keep punching. I'm going to keep on going. I'll keep on swinging until the last man drops. That said, you can find us on Twitter at Signal of Doom. I'm at Red Lantern 2051. Check out my book series, the Asante series, Demon Blade of Exile, Demon City of Innocence, and Demon Soulfighter. They're all available on Amazon, Kindle, or paperback, whatever you prefer. Soulfighter has recently had some nice sales, so thank you for everyone who's out there. If you want to do me a favor, go to iTunes and leave us a review for the Signal of Doom. And if you could do me another favor, go and check Demon Soulfighter out and give it a review on Amazon. I would be much appreciative of that. As I said, next week is The Boys. I will catch you next week. It could be a jump shot during the week because I've got tomorrow off and I planned a game all day, all Monday. I just planned a game all day. I'm going to lock myself into the actual internet. I think I'm going to become one with the machine. There's a new expansion pack released on State of Decay. And, I'm just sort of like, well, you know, that could be my life now. I've got Titanfall 2 and I've got like Doom. I've got a whole stack of games and all I've got is a whole day of just bliss. So I'm just going to plug into that matrix. On that note, thank you so much for listening. Peace out. Keep moving. Keep killing if you have to. Stay fluid. Stay focused. I love you guys. Bye.
stupid.